Yo, everybody, rock and rollers, listen up. This is Jamie St. James from Black and Blue, and I give you the right to rock. Yeah!
The right to rock.
Podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now, get ready for two guys that are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Ragman!
Yeah.
It is a weird fucking name. It just sounds like somebody's like, I'm going to take the off-ramp. Farewell to Freeway.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
See you later, motherfucker.
You think they don't like freeways?
I think they fucking despise freeways.
They're saying, well, farewell.
And they said, we're starting a whole fucking movement.
Hello, Access Road.
Exactly. That's the follow-up. They do a spin-off band. Hello, Access Road.
Yeah, shit. I'm guessing that's what's going to
happen. Well, that'll be their next album name. Farewell to Freeways. So. Hello, Access Road. Or, how do I get on the HOV or whatever?
Shit. Hail to the feeder.
Sounds like the way to go, Holmes.
I think so,
Holmes. You got to figure it out over here.
So that was a cool tune. I dug
that.
That
was nice.
So, John.
There you go. Yeah, John tried to usurp Steven Tyler in
exactly.
Aerosmith.
I hear that is about done.
I think it is. I have a feeling he's probably living under a bridge somewhere and it doesn't have the balls to come back and beg for his job. I wish he would, just so I could get the satisfaction of it.
I had a phone call.
We knew he...
Pick it up. I didn't pick it up.
Oh, okay. But you recognize the number?
Yeah, I recognize the number.
It's probably him.
Yeah.
Because doesn't Yimmick Cheese carry those Go phones or whatever? I mean, he's all about staying off the grid whenever he can.
Yeah.
He's a weird motherfucker.
It's like those phones that you buy for like a week or whatever.
Those Go Tracks or Cricket phones, whatever the fuck. So you can use them and throw them away. like he's a fucking spy or something, like he's the fucking Bourne ultimatum or something.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. I didn't know what this area code was, and I had to look it up.
And it's like Thin Swill or something?
No, no, it was 857 area code.
Uh-huh.
And I looked it up on the internet, and it's Boston.
Ah, okay.
So, who do we know from Boston?
Who else?
Yeah, so.
One shithead in a jockstrap.
I like that. This should have been the title of the new Aerosmith
record. Shithead in a jockstrap. Like, dude looks like a lady. Dude needs to put on some fucking pants or something.
Shithead in a jockstrap. Dude needs fucking pants. Sweet.
Before we go on too much of a tangent.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, video of the evening. We're watching some Manowar Hell on Earth Part 3.
Part 3.
Yeah, there's been a lot of Hell on Earth.
Clear up all those unanswered questions from Hell on Earth.
Hell on Earth. Yeah. Like, from the rapture.
Yeah, because as we know,
we survived.
If you're listening to this now, we survived the rapture.
Yes, right. We did.
In other words, we didn't get picked. And where's the shock there?
Well, you know what? We still have another 4 or 5 months for October to see if that we're all going to just die.
See, there's the stragglers get picked up.
Yeah, exactly.
If 4 dudes and horses come up and say, "We're here to pick up the leftovers."
Dude, I wonder how much money Holmes got from all the dumbasses that gave money
to take care of the pets. That's fucking awesome. I should have done the same fucking thing. Start a website or something. Like, I'll take care of your email. I'll check it for you.
Sure. Well, Wifey heard something on the news about, I guess, the poison control board saying that the radiation from Japan was going to turn people into zombies in the U.S.
Nice.
So she's going to start developing zombie...
like some sort of early warning detection or something?
Well, hey, may help us this Halloween.
Did you know I actually read somewhere, I don't know if it's true, but since it's not April's Fool's Day anymore, sure. I assume that it's real.
Yeah.
One wonders why it's real, because it's like, I hope my government, you know, my taxes aren't going to pay for silly shit like this, but apparently the CDC actually has a zombie outbreak plan.
Well, maybe that's what
she
read.
And I'm like, what the fuck do you need a zombie? There's, you guys know that shit's not real, right? Yeah, it's like, really?
It is real on Halloween.
Zombies are cool, and movies are cool.
And Halloween?
I know. The official take is that they're... Yeah, well, that's because we know the truth.
Yes.
And we've kept it contained.
It's a little hidden,
There's no way that shit's going to go widespread.
True.
But we try to keep that shit on the down low.
Down low, yeah. We know the one night a year it happens, and it gets ugly.
We just don't need people to panic.
Right. I'm sorry. I've got a big mouth.
And we certainly don't need... You know what we don't really don't need? Because luckily the 3 people that listen to this show aren't probably going to spread the word too much.
True.
But what we really don't need is for people to start trying to be vigilante types. You know, like, I want to help because I want to kill zombies and be joining our asses. Because then a lot of people are going to get hurt. You know what I mean? Every year people are getting shot because they go out hunting with their buddies and some other moron goes, "I thought it was a deer." Even though he's wearing like a fucking Sean John jacket or something, and he's got his fucking burr haircut. I mean, he don't look like a deer, but he gets shot anyway.
Yes.
Imagine if we went out with a bunch of yokels who want to do some zombie hunting with us.
Yeah.
That disaster would be...
Bunch of rednecks.
John almost kills us every fucking year anyway.
Oh, yeah.
How bad is it if there's more of them?
I mean, what's going to happen this year if John's not with us?
What?
Say Aerosmith, they change their mind, they bring him back.
I say we just take Justin with us.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be nice.
They'll eat him like a...
Well, I tell you what.
They'll eat him like James Woods on a pussy.
We're...
Oh, no, I'm thinking of James Caan. Never mind.
It still worked.
It still works, yeah.
We've had 2 favorites in John's absence. Uh-huh. One being Charlie Sheen and one being Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Mel. Mel's always in there. He's always kind of hanging out.
Artie was nice, too. He left us this box of Cubans.
Yeah,
which is nice.
Yeah.
Smoking some of these.
I think he's trying to bribe his way in.
Oh, he's trying to. He's got a $500 million fortune that's getting cut in half thanks to Murray.
True.
So that's still a decent amount of cash.
Yeah, it's a lot of bread. It's a lot of bread.
Well, you want to move forward so we can open up this beer?
Yeah,
because it's really
do.
Calling my name.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, like I said, we're watching Man of War. And the reason we're watching Man of War is we've lost another metal.
Compatriot?
Compatriot, yeah, for sure. Scott Columbus. From Manowar, the drummer for Manowar. And this was mentioned on the Paulie Z podcast 119.
Mm-hmm.
that Scott died here several weeks ago.
Video, huh?
Yeah, so we decided to put in a little Man of War tonight. It's our first show to do any sort of tribute to Scott.
Nice. Nice way to
a metal warrior. Truly a metal warrior playing with the great band, underrated band, Man of War.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we'll do a moment of silence, and we're going to do Scott's favorite song that he enjoyed doing with the band. This is The Gates of Valhalla. Check it out.
Thank you.
It's hot. Things are tough all over, dude.
You know what? We didn't open our beers, but we're going to do something. We've got cans. We have one each. We're going to go simultaneously.
I think we should because I'm real fucking excited about this beer. I hope it's as good as I'm anticipating.
One.
Let's do it.
And a two. And a three. Nice.
That opened nice.
We both smell. I don't smell coconut yet. The lime and the coconut.
Hell yeah. Well,
while we're pouring. Milchen.
Yeah, while we're pouring this out,
we'll
go ahead.
We'll play some Nielsen's Milchen. No, I'm joking.
I mentioned what this is.
Ooh, that smells good. Is it going in?
It should. More air. This shit actually comes from Hawaii. I think our first Hawaii
Waikiki?
Brewery. Well, tell you what, this guy.
Well, you have the Kona Brewery. Where's the Kona Brewery from? Is that Hawaii?
I assume it is. This beer actually comes from Hawaii as well. It's won the World Beer Cup Gold Award. Won in the year, 2006? The Urban Spice Beer category. It's brewed in Canada at the Maui Brewing Company in Lahaina, Maui, Hawaii. So actually from Maui. And this sucker here is the Maui Brewing Company Coconut Porter. Like hot chicks on the beach. It's a porter brewed with hand-toasted coconut.
Hand-toasted?
Yeah, we can't trust machines to be toasting this shit. We gotta have hands involved. Humans got to get involved. And so apparently they've done so, and this is their product. And heck, if it won an award, hopefully it's good, right?
Well, you know what? In I just brought up Kona Brewing. I think I've had some Kona beer before.
I know you've had Hawaii coffee, too. Right? Maybe it's some Blue Mountain coffee or the Kona coffee or whatever.
Well, they have a brewery too.
Nice.
In Hawaii. I think we've had, maybe not on the show, maybe independently. Mm-hmm. We've had some of their beer. That's not too bad.
You want to try it? It's good. Oh,
I had head.
Here we go. Intrigue.
It's good. I don't taste it. Yeah, I do taste a little bit of coconut at the end, almost like the back blackberry we had a show back.
Yeah, it's got the aftertaste comes in.
And not to take away from the beer we're drinking. I've had the Pipeline Porter from this Kona Brewery.
Ah, so the Kona Brewery you've tried, the Pipeline Porter. Interesting.
And they got a Longboard Island Lager, Big Wave Golden Ale, Fire Rock Pale Ale, Kona Brown Nut Brown Ale. Mm-hmm. Brown Nut Brown?
Wow, they're really about the color.
Yeah, they're about that. Walua Wheat in the Pipeline Porter. Okay. Again, not trying to take away from what we're drinking because it's what we're drinking, and it's good. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to bring up another note. I think we have had it. I don't think we've ever reviewed any Kona beer.
Well, I think that, I don't think that we have. And I think this actually, in my opinion, or maybe I'm wrong, I think this actually is the first Hawaiian beer we've had ever.
Yes. On the show.
We've managed to afford it for 120 something shows.
Isn't that unfucking believable?
Eh?
Eh?
Unbelievable.
What do we think about that beer over there?
You know I dig the new stuff. It's fucking phenomenal. Tone Loke agrees, Holmes. I think
he does.
Let's give this a rating. Let's go on taste. What do you think?
Taste.
It's a little early to say, actually.
It's hard to say. This. Unlike the blackberry porter we had a
flavor's
show back.
It's not as distinct as you would think.
No.
It's not like it goes, it's not like it tastes like an Almond Joy or something.
It tastes like a typical porter.
Basically, yeah.
I don't really taste the coconut so much. Just a little hint at the end.
I admit.
Not very pronounced.
I agree.
Which I gotta Which say, is I prefer bad. That. I prefer that.
Right.
I don't want it to be overbearing, do you?
Yeah, you don't want to hit you over the head and go, by the way, I'm a flavor beer. That's a good point, because that's when it gets a little gimmicky and it's like, okay, you guys are kind of fucking around.
That's what I'm saying. So
let's go for taste, maybe a two, two and a half?
Yes.
I mean, it's not bad or anything. Drinkability, it's pretty good, two and a half maybe?
Yeah, we'll go two and a half.
And then alcohol, I believe this is your average sort of 6.5? Yeah, 6.0 by volume. So, let's give that another 2. Well, 2.5. What the hell? I'll be generous tonight. Giving it an overall of around, 2.5. So it's not.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, not the greatest beer, but ever, but not.
I'm not going to be writing home to mom or emailing.
Yeah, we're not going to be begging to have this again.
But you're not a bad beer. That's cool. Well, this allows us to move along.
True.
That's my topic.
Well,
sorry,
I'm a little
tired, but our topic is.
We have porter, so that's going to wake you up. There's a little bit of caffeine in it.
Nice.
I think. I'm just guessing.
I have a feeling you're probably fucking wrong.
But I tell you what, we're going to do a follow-up show to one of our more popular shows. And you guys, I know you're saying, you guys keep on saying everything's so popular, but you look on the site and there's no comments about a show or something like that. We just know that these shows are popular. Because we just got that feeling.
We believe listen to in our them, heart.
And we can say, that was a good show. People enjoyed that.
I agree.
Because at least we know two that did. Maybe three. Depending. So, anyway, long story short, the Revolver Golden God Awards, hosted by wrestler Chris Jericho. Also, Franz Fosse. Not a big fan.
No.
Why does Chris Jericho get so much play? Because he's a friend of Eddie Trunks?
I think what it is he's just a friend of a lot of people. Because you talk to actual metal people or hear interviews with them, and they mention Chris Jericho, and they're not on a show with him, so they don't have to make up any sign. It's like an interview in a magazine. Someone will mention Chris Jericho, and I've seen so many people go, "Yeah, homeboy's cool, dude. I love his stuff." And you're just like,
"He's a metalhead. I'll give him that."
Yeah, totally. And he's got his own band. I don't know if he plays any music. Does he actually play an instrument?
Yeah, he plays. He sings.
He sings. Well, that's not really
right. I don't know if he plays guitar or anything like that.
I'd say that would take some talent,
but. Let's just dissect this. Let's not be pricks about it.
Oh, well, fair enough.
If we can.
Okay.
It's hard for us not to be pricks.
All is ripping. All these guys are ripping.
Is that Joey DeMayo?
Joey DeMayo?
That's Joey DeMayo. That's a bass.
He's playing no shit? Yeah. Damn, well, that is impressive. He's even surpassing Richie Blackmore's standards.
The fuck? You're kidding me. Shows how much I've watched this video.
That motherfucker's playing that on the bass?
That's Joey DeMayo. Fuck, he's a bass player.
That's fucking crazy. He's got like dual humbuckers on a bass guitar.
Oh, he's insane.
That is insane.
That's gonna be a regular guitar player, a guitar.
Or one of those like Michael Manring's fucking crazy guitar.
I thought I only saw four.
Four tuning pegs on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a fucking bass guitar, dude. It may be a five stringer, but I think it's a four. That's ridiculous.
Look at him.
He's doing like this eight finger technique or some shit.
That's a band that's just totally underrated, not to take away from our topic.
Apparently
here.
So, dude. I had no idea the motherfucker could play like that.
They're all about metal, too.
I thought they were just one of those old classic sort of cheese bands. Well, not cheese, but you know what I mean. Just old school metal.
They're old school metal. They're a little cheesy, but
they've got chops.
The guitar player is really good.
Fuck yeah, that's great. That's awesome, dude.
And that's your bass player right there.
That's the shit right there. That's the bass player you want. So anyway, so you want to jump into the old Golden Gods scene?
Hosted by Chris Jericho. Who would you have hosted? I think, wouldn't you, if it's VH1 Classic, wouldn't you even have like a guy like Eddie Trunk?
I was going to say, you just have the Trunk go up there.
Why would you have Chris Jericho? Is he a bigger name in the metal community than Chris Jericho? No.
No, but this isn't for the metal community. This is for metal fans, and I think in metal fans' eyes, Chris Jericho's big.
Not to me.
Not to you, but you're one of the real people. I mean, look at what we do. We do a whole fucking show. We're this much into it. Mo, your average person who just goes and picks up CDs every now and then, they're fucking all about it.
Were they like a wrestling fan? Well, maybe they should have somebody from NASCAR.
The metal and the wrestling fan is real closely matched. I don't know why.
What about NASCAR?
No, that's country music, dude.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I would think.
I don't know.
I mean, I know there probably is some crossover, of course, but generally it's a rednecky kind of thing, I think. He's really fucking ripping this thing.
I have not watched this close enough to see this happen.
Well,
I've never seen a tremolo bar on a bass.
I know, it's like, this is weird. But he's good. I'll give him that.
Well, okay. So we digress one more time. Okay. So, appearances by Metallica.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. Motley Crue.
Uh-huh.
Alice Cooper.
Right.
B-O-B-I-E, Zombie, Bobby Zombie.
Bobby
Zombie. Rob's younger brother. No, Rob Zombie. Allison Chains, Sebastian Bach, Duff McKagan, Vinnie Paul, William Shatner.
What?
Avenged Sevenfold. I would see Christopher Lee over William Shatner, right?
Fuck yeah. He'll be the shit.
Dude's okay. A huge Man of War fan.
Yeah, so.
Which is crazy.
There we go.
The dude's so. Like 80, he's almost 90, and he fucking loves Man of War.
Totally.
Crazy.
Totally. So we're going to go over the awards. I'm going to tell you what we think over here. If I can find them over here. Uh-oh. The Warriors of the World. Okay, here we go. Genghis, drum roll, please. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can't read. I'm digging this Warriors of the World. Okay. Best guitarist. We picked... Did we pick Gus G or Alexi Laiho? We picked Gus G because Alexi Laiho, it was a... God, what word am I looking for?
Honestly, I don't know.
He didn't get it because they didn't have a new record out.
Oh, okay.
So it was won by Zachy Vengeance and Sylvester Snatch.
From Avenged Sevenfold?
Or Sylvester...
Sinister Gates?
Gates.
You always get the name of Sylvester. Sinister. Sinister Gates. It's spelled funny.
I can't read. It's kind
of... And it's spelled funny. They spell it with like a Y.
Why would I say Sinister Snatch? Sylvester Snatch.
Well, because you see the S-Y and you think Sylvester. But he's spelling Sinister. That's why I think it's goofy that okay. They spell their names like that.
Do like, we agree?
That they won?
Well, we played some Avenged Sevenfold and we said... I tell you what, let's give you some Gus G's, real Gus G's. Let's play some little bit of Firewind off their last record. Check it out. It's not something you're going to remember, in my opinion. Then you're going to say, wow, I love that solo in, you know, Nightmare or whatever song. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I think I totally agree with you there. So, okay. Interesting. So, they went with the Avenged Sevenfold. All right, the popular vote is what it sounds
so
like.
So, we lost that one.
Fair enough.
According to the popular public. See how relevant we are.
We see what our opinions are worth.
All right. I just was blown away by this one.
Uh-huh.
Comeback of the Year. The Murder Dolls.
The Murder Dolls?
Yeah, we picked Accept.
Fuck. All right.
So,
I hope it doesn't go like this for everything.
Yeah, we played some Accept last time. So, yeah, we failed miserably on that one. All right. So, all right. Best Live Band.
Best Live Band. Okay.
I don't remember. I wish I had the...
Our results, what we've chose?
Well, not that. Just if I could look at all the nominees, I could tell you who we picked.
Oh, okay, good.
But
I honestly don't remember myself. I'm going to put that out there.
Best live band? Did we even vote on that?
You know, I don't think so.
Okay. So, that went to Rammstein. I can't say that, I mean, that's, I'm all about that.
Uh-huh.
You know, whatever. It happens. Oh, no. I think we went with Maiden. We went with Iron Maiden.
Okay, fair enough. And so, who did they choose again?
We played some new Maiden. They chose Rammstein.
Rammstein?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, so. Right now we're batting 1,000. We've lost every, or we have not voted with the popular public for 3 of these.
Now, let me ask this before we go forward. The Golden Gods are, if I'm not mistaken, it's decided by like a little sort of panel, right?
Well, I think it's by people, readers in the magazine.
Oh, really?
I think you vote, popular vote.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
So I think we're starting to see the demographic here. What do you think?
I think it sounds, I mean, it would seem to bear out that way, right?
So we're all bucks, apparently, that are stuck in the 80s.
It is kind of messed up. You'll always get, I mean, you don't always get who you pick, right? But
you can't.
I mean, so far, I mean,
what you want.
But I mean, so far, we haven't picked any of them, right? I'm like,
no,
are
we
just that out of touch, or did they just go for really weird picks, or what?
We're doing piss poor.
Apparently so. We're batting like 100.
We hadn't won nothing, so let's see if we win some. Okay. Let's see the... what is this? Lifetime Achievement or something like that.
Right.
That's Alice Cooper. We agreed with that. That was cool.
Fair enough.
All right, James Dio Award. Oh, that's Lifetime Achievement. Motley Crue.
Right.
I don't know what the fuck Alice won. He won a Golden God for something.
Well,
all right. Metal Athlete, we didn't vote on that. Honorary Headbanger. William Shatner.
Bullshit. That's who they picked?
Captain Kirk. I would have gave that to Christopher Lee. I think we both concur.
Fair right? enough. I trust you. No shit, they went with...
Oh, we got one. We got one.
We got one right, you
Best
mean?
New band.
Who did we pick?
Black Veil Brides.
Nice, I remember that.
So,
man.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we got one. Oh, we got two.
Oh, yeah?
Best drummer.
Best who?
Mike Portnoy.
Oh, okay, with Avenged Sevenfold, nice.
Yeah, because he was with Avenged Sevenfold.
I know.
Not because he was with Dream Theater, because he was with Avenged Sevenfold.
I know, it's like he decided to go off and do his thing, but when
Guess who cleaned up at this thing?
I don't know.
Avenged Sevenfold.
No shit. Just award after award, I guess?
Yeah. Best vocalist. M. Shadows.
No shit?
Yeah. I think we picked Ozzy.
Oh, really? Huh. I'm a little surprised we picked Ozzy. Although maybe there was just no one that good on the list, right?
No, it's between Ozzy and Dickinson.
Okay, and Dickinson seems like kind of too obvious a choice.
Well, we went off the new records by each band.
Okay, so we tried to be fair. It's for this year, so just look at this year's work.
And we said we like Scream better than the New Maiden. Fair
I'll
enough.
Stand by that. Sorry, I had a glass full of new
oh,
beer.
Oh, sure. Well,
I'll stand
I mean,
by that. That's
and
fair.
And then we put our two cents on who we thought was better. But
fair enough.
So, album of the year.
Uh-huh.
You and I went between Scream and the New Black, or the Order of the Black.
Oh, the New Black Label
Society?
Yeah.
Guess who won?
Scream. Black Label Society? No. Avenged Sevenfold?
Yes.
Come on. So they just swept.
They swept. They swept, how many categories? 3 categories. Best guitarist, best vocalist, and best album. I can't go with that. I don't believe it.
I think I can. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's a fine album, and I want to go listen to it. I admit I haven't listened
it's
to it.
It's okay.
That's what I figured.
It's
That's what's
okay.
Okay.
Okay, what? Okay.
No,
it's okay. It's not the best.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it's not like blowing everybody away.
It didn't blow us away.
That's why I've hesitated to go listen to it. I thought it's probably not going to blow me away, so why rush to it?
I'm so glad John's not here. That's about it. I mean, I think the show will be interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. Because it looks like there's some cool performances and stuff like that in the magazine here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and let's let you guys know, we're not bashing Avenged Sevenfold.
No, played them on
the show here how many times?
I've got their first couple albums. I mean, they're pretty good.
And the new record's good.
I figure it is. I mean, it's got Portnoy on it, right?
Well, yeah, well, let's play something off of it. Let's play a little new Avenged Sevenfold.
Hey, kid, do I have your attention? I know the way you've been living. Life's so reckless, tragedy endless. Welcome to the family. Hey, there's something missing. Only time will alter your vision. Never in question, lethal injection. Welcome to the family.
Not long ago, you'd find the answers were so crystal clear. Within a day, you find yourself living in constant fear.
Yeah, so, you know, we're not saying that. We're just saying that, I mean, if you put it, maybe we're too old school. Maybe we're thinking too much in the past. I don't think so.
I don't know.
If there's a, if putting all the records out there that we listen to, what are the ones that we're going to listen to the most? You know, what do we listen to throughout the year? You know what I'm saying? And, I mean, that's what it boils down to. But
fair enough.
I don't. I think it turns into a little bit of a popularity contest.
Yeah, and that's why I don't often pay attention to a lot of award shows, including, like, I dropped the Grammys and the Oscars years ago.
Oh yeah.
I just got tired of it. It's like, you know what? This is all really, as cliche as it sounds, you know, as it sounds. I always say it's kind of a popularity contest. Popularity contest in terms of whoever the judging committee is, and it's usually some little group of people, mm-hmm. like in the area of the Oscar.
Right.
It's one little group of people. It's these dudes on the board of whatever, and they're the ones making the decisions. That's why I think a lot of people have turned to things like the People's Choice Awards and the Golden Globes, because that's decided by the people.
Right.
Which they figure, rightly so, I think. It's like, well, we're the ones who matter. You little assholes run the studios. You've got a personal stake in everything. I mean, it's a little harder to trust your judgment when you say this movie was the best.
We're the fucking
people. We're the ones who pay money to see your shit, so we're the ones who should decide on who's got the best album or who's got the best movie out this year or who's the best actor or whatever.
Well, let me ask you
this. So I respect that.
Let me ask you this, my good friend, Paisan, Mr. Genghis. Mm-hmm. Mr. Genghis. You sound like cheese for a second.
Mm-hmm.
What do these people really have to gain?
By nominating and awarding these people?
The record company, yes. Album sales.
Right. And that's probably primarily the
Do you
concern.
Think it's all record company people?
Beyond that, yeah. I was going to say, beyond that, it's like they can't all be on the fucking record company making money at it. Otherwise, I think a lot of it comes from pressure that you feel to pick. For instance, if you always go with, like, if every year you choose, you know, if Iron Maiden came out with an album this year, we're just going to pick them because I think they're the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like it's going to get old. One, people are going to be like, that can't be true that they're the ones who always had the best album of the year, right? I know you like them, so that's a little suspicious.
But take it back to the comeback of the year.
Uh-huh.
The Murder Dolls, or Accept. Accept had one of the highest rated records by the metal community.
I was going to say rated by the community.
Hammer, all these magazines, the RightToRock.com,
mm-hmm.
one of the best records out there last year, and the Murder Dolls get it. Come on.
I agree. Well, what was it that famous year, the first time there was a metal category in the Grammys? And who won it? Jethro Tull won out over fucking True. Metallica. And you're True. Like, really? Jethro, they're not even metal.
Right.
So what kind of bullshit is that?
It's a faggot with the flute.
Yeah, which, you know, I'm not Dixon Tull, but it's like, if you're going for that, it's like, metal, though? I never would have considered Jethro Tull metal.
I didn't
metal.
Say that either.
And certainly, if that year he was running against Metallica before they sucked ass, it's like, well, there's no contest. Obviously, the more metal band is Metallica,
True.
The more talented in terms of being able to play all these crazy licks, clearly they're outmatched. I mean, fucking Metallica sweeps that category, you know? It's like, why is it even a contest?
True.
But surprisingly, I guess in the truest sense of the word, people were surprised. They went to Jethro fucking Tull. It's like, really?
Dude.
For metal?
Dude, let's play some metal.
You had us going there, Paisley.
I thought about it. I said, I don't care.
Let's just say, I've been abrasive. Need to get back to the
island. I have been abrasive. I actually was served some legal papers by Bieber's people for the way I treated him several shows back.
He's a sensitive lion.
But he still wants to come back. So isn't that weird?
I think it's totally weird, but I think fame is weird that way. Fame has you acting in ways you would never fucking act.
True.
And you can even realize, wait a minute, I'm only doing this because this person's famous and I think it'll get me something or whatever. You can even know that and still act that way because it's just, when you're caught up in the moment, you almost can't help yourself. It's weird that fame is so potent a force in our lives when we really sit down and think about it.
This is true. Well, I'll tell you what, Paisan. Let's get on to some. I'm taking this beer.
I am, dude.
I'm going to drink the rest of yours. Allison and Lamb.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you bastard. Now, tell you what, I'm going to pick a classic if you're cool with it.
Please do. So we're going to wrap this sucker up.
I was thinking a little bit of Hurricane.
Oh, nice.
Off the Slave to the Thrill record.
Love the album cover.
10,000 years, baby. Let's do it.
Fitting in.
Yeah, yeah. So I tell you what. How about we do our picks of the week over here?
Alrighty.
Alright, my pick of the week is going to be the new one from Destrophe. They got a brand new record out called Cry Havoc. I want to play the title track, Cry Havoc. Let's check it out. Some say they die alone.
Nothing free, no happy end.
good little vibes by these guys' second record over there. And they're kind of interesting because their first record was kind of what you just heard, but got really heavy in some spots where you're like, it's like a death metal band? What are these guys doing? So kind of an interesting little breed these cats are. So I dig them. New record's very cool. A bit more commercial. I think it's because they had some commercial success with their last one on the tracks that were more commercial.
Right.
So it makes sense. It's like, let's do that. You know what I'm saying?
I think a lot of bands, companies, whoever, that they end up doing that. Let's take the thing with the least amount of risk combined, you know, something that simultaneously is a proven formula.
Right.
So it's like, let's just go with that. Why question it? And I guess, you know, if people are willing to, you know, say, yes, I accept this as your output, as your product, and I want more, then why? What's to stop them from ever doing it?
True.
It's like, fuck it, let's just keep reducing this shit, because exactly. They love it. So, anyway, I guess it is what it is. And
Check out the new Destrophe. Very cool record.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have a feeling, though. I mean, these guys are really good. I'm really enjoying their
stuff. You dug that track, didn't you?
I have to admit, I am.
Did you get wood?
A little bit.
I only had a partial motor.
No shit.
Dude, real quick, we got to tell you guys, if you don't have it, go get it. The new Archer series DVD is fucking hilarious. If you like Venture Brothers, you'll like Archer. That's all I got to say. Forget about it.
That's all many of us can say over here.
So, Genghis, pick of the week?
Pick of the week? I'm going to pick something off of, I think I mentioned before on a previous podcast that I downloaded a bunch of new music to listen to, all totally legit, of course. And
because you're too legit to quit.
Well,
too legit, whatever.
What I did is I went with one of these albums. One of them, however, is
we're both fucked tonight.
We are, dude. We're way fucking. I've been drinking way too much. I'm trying to keep my head straight while I'm thinking about this. I say, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and pick something a little bit older. I'm going to pick something off of Red Circuit.
Sweet. That's a good record.
Thinking Red Circuit, and I'm going to go with the track, You Can Sleep While You're Dead.
We can all sleep while we're dead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They get it together.
Let's do it.
Silence. Reasons. Came to an end. Distance. Prayers. Are fading. Forces me
eyes, it's time to take another.
That's it, and there it is, my friend.
What's this homeboy? Damn. Look at him.
He's just fucking ripping everyone.
And people don't know Manowar for the guitar player ripping, but this cat, dude, can rip. So anyway, guys, we want to thank you for joining us once again. We hope you enjoyed the show. It's our recap of the Revolver Golden Gods Awards. You won't have to hear about it for another year. You won't have to hear us bitch and moan and tell people how fucked they are.
Be
because bad. We're right and no one else is.
Well, you know, that's true.
It's the way it happens. It's the way it is. Anyway, guys, we want to tell you thanks for listening and two big
horns up.
This is Jamie St. James from the almighty Black and Blue Rock and Roll Band. You're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up!
With Ragman, mono e mono, with the Saints. This is Jamie St. James.
Stereo e stereo.
Exactly. Give it up, people. How about that applause, Jamie? Did you like that?
I heard it all the way from Los Angeles. Rock and roll, everybody.
Well, that's our studio audience, and they were very excited to know that you were coming on the show with us this evening. Jamie, we want to start off by thanking you for coming on the show. And it's time to catch up, man. Black and Blue. It's been a while. It's been 20-plus years since you got a new record, but you guys have been playing since. Can you kind of tell us how this all came together with you guys reuniting? I know you guys got back together in 97, but really when this kind of thing kind of snowballed into what it is now with you guys reforming and putting out a new record.
Yeah, we you know, in the 90s we got together here and there. We did the live album, but that was just getting together for one show. You know, but basically, I don't know, in, you know, 2002-ish, I got a deal in Europe to do a solo record, and basically at that point, I just thought, why am I going to do that? I mean, let me talk to the guys and see if they want to do a Black and Blue record, and I'll just make it that, and that's what I did. Of course, the label at the time was thrilled to get a Black and Blue record when they only signed just me, so they got a good deal on that, but, you know, but then it just took us a long time to do it. We had to get, you know, together, because half the guys were 1,000 miles away in Oregon, and then me and Pete Holmes were down in Los Angeles. So that was just a difficult thing. Anyway, long story short, it just basically took us a lot of work to get together, and then I joined Warrant for 4 years, and that made it difficult during that time. So all in all, it was something we knew we were going to finish, but it took a lot of effort and a lot of finagling. You know, we changed labels and all that, but finally, Hell Yeah is out. It's a great record.
Oh yeah, totally cool, man. Totally cool. Well, let me ask you this: when you decided to do this thing and go from the solo record to a full Black and Blue project, how difficult was it to get everybody back into it? I know Tommy was busy at that point, but what about the rest of the guys? Was it hard looking everybody up, or had you kind of stayed in contact?
No, we're all friends. I mean, we've been friends since we were like in high school. We didn't all go to the same high school, but we all grew up in Portland, Oregon, and we formed a band. We all knew each other from different bands. It's kind of a strange thing, but we're friends. And I called up Jeff Warner, and he was totally into it, and he had a studio at the time too. So that was kind of a bonus. And then Patrick said, "Well, you know, I'll do it if the songs are good, you know." And obviously Tommy, I think at the time Tommy was just working for Kiss. I don't think he was in Kiss, but he was touring with them. He was their tour manager and doing all kind of stuff. So there was no way we were going to get him. And basically, I think Pete was touring with Shanker, but I had Patrick and Whoop on board, so I knew I had 3 out of 5. So I said, "That's a go." I mean, and I'll get Pete involved. He was also playing, I think, a lot with Michael Shanker Group at the time. So yeah, it was a great move, I think, and it wasn't hard to talk them into it at all.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, let me ask you this: in the songwriting process, when you got the solo deal, did you start writing in that kind of a solo vein, or did you just say screw it at that point? You went ahead and contacted the guys, and you guys started writing for this Black and Blue record.
Well, I wrote a couple of songs that got me the deal. You know, I had to send a demo over to show them what I was doing, and actually, it was 3 songs, and 2 of those songs are actually on the record. The song Hell Yeah and a song called So Long. Then the rest of it all started really becoming Black and Blue. Not that those didn't sound like Black and Blue. Look, I've been a co-writer or soul writer for Black and Blue music throughout the years, so I know what it is. I know how to be Black and Blue. I wasn't trying to do anything too different solo-wise, but then it was a Black and Blue record that really focused me, you know, and so basically the whole record was written by myself and Jeff Whoop Warner, either individually or together, and really came out total Black and Blue, man.
Well, was it weird doing this record without Tommy involved? Because I know you guys have been really close friends for over the years. Nope. And great writing partners.
And we're still very close. It was a little strange, but it was so obvious. It wasn't like there was going to be a chance he was going to quit Kiss and join Black and Blue, you know. So it was real cut and dry. It's like, we're not getting Tommy. We're either doing it without him or we're not, you know. And if it wasn't sounding right, then I would have said, you know, this isn't working. But it looks, Black and Blue is 5 guys, so that's how we get that sound. And missing Tommy, sure, but I think we did a fine job, and Tommy thinks so as well. Tommy has the record; he loves it.
Oh, that's perfect. That was my next question, to see how Tommy, what he thought of the new record.
Yeah, I just talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and he said, "Dude, I love it." He goes, "There's some really cool stuff on there." He just talked to me from Canada. Kiss was playing shows up in Canada recently, and he says he got it, he loves it, he thinks it's great, and, you know, I mean, that's really nice.
Any feedback from Gene and Paul?
I haven't heard anything from those guys, but I'm sure they like it. They always like Black and Blue.
I know. It was so cool back in the day when you guys started working with Gene on the Nasty Nasty and In Heat. Those were just such great records. I've got a question. I read something, and I don't know if this is true or false. You can put truth or false to this rumor. But when you guys, after In Heat, when you're in the midst of kind of calling it quits, there was some rumors that you guys were writing some new material at the time with Gene. Did any of that, where's that material wound up, or did that even happen?
Yeah, well, it did happen. Actually, In Heat, I'll give you more. I'll give you the real stuff here. In Heat was turning out to be a pretty cool record for the time. You know, there was some really good songs on it. It wasn't done yet, but there was some really good stuff on it. And Gene actually had a record label, and we were kind of working with Geffen on what are they going to do with us, you know, and basically they weren't even going to cut a video, which they didn't. They weren't going to really get behind it very much, and Gene Simmons tried to buy us off of Geffen to put us on Simmons Records at the mm-hmm. time. Geffen said no, they wouldn't do it, you know, and he offered them a hell of a lot of money. So the record really never had a chance, but then after that, Gene Simmons basically became our manager and was working with us, and we wrote a bunch of tunes, recorded some demos, and it kind of, it was just kind of weird. It was kind of strange. The band was kind of fall apart after you lose a deal and you put four records out on a major label. It kind of gets weird. And we're getting close to the 90s and things are getting odd. And I think we just kind of fell apart. So there were some demos made, and I don't even know if I have copies of some of them, but there's some pretty cool tunes. But basically, it just kind of fizzled out, and Tommy quit, and that was when I said, okay, well, I'm done.
Yeah, and I guess if you ever found any of this stuff, would they ever see the light of day, you think, or?
I don't know, man. There was a couple of really good songs I remember, and I would think, you know, it's a funny thing because it was stuff that the band was so disjointed. It was basically me and Tommy and Gene just doing everything and coming up with demos, and the band was kind of left out. So I don't know if those guys would be really too into it, to be honest with you. There was a couple of really good songs, but, you know, who knows? Who knows? I'm not afraid of digging up the past, but I always like to go forward, yeah.
Well, I got to say, it's such a shame because In Heat, it was such a killer record. That should have been the record, in my opinion, that really you guys would have, should have broken through on, because it was heavy, had the grooves, and just so many great songs. One of my favorites definitely is Snake.
Snake is awesome. That's a great riff.
Dude, that riff is just awesome. And, I mean, hell, they should have made a video for that. Because if they would have, you guys would have, you know, I think you would have had more longevity, for sure.
Well, I actually went in and talked to the president of Geffen Records. His name was Eddie Rosenblatt. And I asked him, I said, listen, I don't care about tour support or anything right now. I just care about a video. Because in those days, a video meant everything. And if you don't do a video, it was like, kind of like, you know, you're just being left behind. And we wanted the single to be Live It Up. And we really pushed for it, but it just, they didn't want anything to do with it. They said, no, you're a live band. We're just going to send you out on the road and see what happens. And basically they said, we know that you'll make our money back. You always do. And if it pops, then we're lucky. If not, it's going to be at the end. So, very strange way to look at it, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean,
what can I say?
it's a total shame because I'm sure you've heard this a lot. You guys definitely should have been bigger than you ever got, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? We're still alive. We're still here. And there's a lot of fans that really like us. So, you know, not too bad in the scheme of things.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. It's very encouraging that you guys were in 2010, 2011, and you guys are still putting out new music. So that's totally awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, we do it because we love it. And, you know, huge success, yeah, I want it. Maybe one day I'll get it. But I also, it's in my blood, and I love doing it. So, you know, that's the kind of guys we are. So.
That's killer, dude. Well, I before we move on to the new record, just because we have been kind of covering the past a little bit here, I just want to tell the guys out there that aren't aware that Jamie had a solo band in the 90s called Freight Train Jane, and they did a record called Hallucination, which was very killer. It's probably out of print and very hard to find. But can you tell us a little bit, I guess after Black and Blue split, how did you get that together? And what was your thought on putting a band together at that point?
Well, I definitely wanted to put a new band together. I wanted to try something different, you know, because I had been in Black and Blue for, you know, 10 years. And beyond that, I mean, I'd been playing with Tommy since, you know, my God, for like 14 years or 15 years or something. I mean, we had been playing together a long time. So we were, since we were kids. And I wanted to put another band together. I wanted to do something different. One guitarist that was shredding, bass player, drummer, and lead singer, you know. And I wanted to just see what I could do with it. Now, Freight Train Jane is a great record. It's not only hard to get, it's not out of print. The label doesn't even exist anymore. It was only released on a Japanese label. So it is very rare and hard to find. But killer record. And, you know, I think it's a fine piece of work. Tommy Bolin was a great guitarist, shredding on that thing, and the players were all good. And it was a nice record.
And definitely some killer tunes, like the title track, and I think my favorite was probably Bye Bye Love.
On there, and it's a little bit black and bluish, but you know, anytime you're going to get my voice, you're going to get a black and blue kind of tone to it. But I think it was a little raw and heavier than some of the stuff we did, maybe like just kind of raw, just going for it kind of stuff. But it was really good.
Well, you know what, that was kind of the thing back then too, you know, a little bit more raw and stuff like that, and you guys totally hit it, and it's a shame that that one didn't take off, and you could have got some distribution and maybe a little bit more going on with that one, but...
Yeah, hey, we got a Japanese deal, and that was it, and we basically played around Los Angeles a lot. We had a pretty good name around there, but you got to remember, it was 94, I think, and just wasn't... They weren't looking for anything like us.
Yeah, the death of our music, my friend. A short-lived death, because it came back, and it's stronger. It's just, I wouldn't say it's as strong today as it was back in the 80s, but it's pretty strong again, and a great label like Frontiers is bringing back all these great groups, and guys like myself that are in their 40s are just, I mean, we're just having a heyday again.
Yeah, well, Frontiers basically saved Hell Yeah, you know. They took us on. We changed labels and went with them, and they gave us the money to finish it, and they're our heroes. Frontiers is great.
Oh, they are. They are. Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so the record was being started in 2003, and you had 8 years. How many songs from 03 to, you know, through 2011 actually wound up? I mean, did you ever have the actual album done, and then the deal kind of fell through, and then Frontiers picked you up, and then did you go back
anything? Honestly, we didn't. We were just trying to get together to record, and that it took so long. Some of the songs were written midstream, you know. Some of them I had. Whoop had a couple. I just call him Whoop, you know, Jeff Whoop Warner. I'm sorry for all these years. Whoop. He had some. When I had to move up to Portland for a while, and we wrote some tunes together. And we wrote a bunch of songs. Some of them never got recorded. We were on a limited time frame, limited budget. So we had to pick songs before we take them in the studio, because once we pick them and start recording, we didn't have the luxury to stop and then start a different one. So we had other songs in the making that we didn't end up recording, but we had to fine tune it because we didn't have the cash to just go nuts, you know. So, and we almost were finished with the record at one point with Frontiers, never before that, but they wanted it to be longer, so we added a couple more, and that's part of the reason why it took long too.
Well, let's talk about it. There's some great songs on here. I think the one that's kind of got my ear right now is Fool's Bleed. Can you kind of tell me, is there any kind of story about that song, or give us some insight how that song came together for you?
just one thing I really know, that you're leaving today. Feel like a phantom inside, with a mask on my face. Let me smile for a little while, get me out of this place.
I was living with Jeff Lupwarner. We were trying to work on stuff, and I was just kind of hanging out. I was sitting there with my guitar, and I started kind of strumming out some stuff, picking those chords out, trying to get them right. And Jeff came over, and he said, "Oh, no, change the picking to this. It'll be cooler." So I changed the picking a little bit, and then I said, "Okay, just leave me alone for a half hour," you know. And I wrote the rest of the song, lyrics and everything, just pulled it out. I said, "Whoop, come here." He sat down. I just played it for him. He goes, "Holy crap, that's on the record. That's great." And I mean, it was one of those songs that wrote itself. And kind of at the time, I was having a problem with my girlfriend, so maybe that kind of added to the authenticity of it, you know.
There you go. And that's something I love about Black and Blue, is kind of these darker ballad things you guys do. It's killer, 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 killer stuff, man.
Well, it's funny because all the guys that know me real well, you know, always say, "Jamie, when you're hurting or with something going wrong with you, just write a song, please, because you really just, that's what great shit comes out of you." So,
you know what? What's cool too is it always seems like what you were just saying, the songs that come quicker are usually some of the better tunes you come up with, you know?
Yeah, sometimes the ones that write themselves, it just flow out, and you know, the melody hits, the chords you're doing, and it's like, oh my god, you can't write it fast enough, you know, you're just trying to get it all together, because I hear the next chord before it's coming, and the lyrics are perfect on top of it. I mean, the lyrics in Fool's Bleed are the first ones I wrote in that half hour was work, you know, and it just, that's it. And those are the ones that usually are the best to write.
Oh, yeah, and I also love the title track, Hell Yeah. That's a good, just old-fashioned, hard-rocking, up-tempo rocker, man. I really like the vibe of that one as well.
The writing credits aren't on the record for some reason. I don't know why. I sent them to Italy, to Frontiers, but they never made it on there. That song I wrote, but I wrote it with Tommy Thayer, and I were writing some stuff together, and he just mentioned to me, he goes, "You know, we ought to write a song called Hell Yeah." I go, "Hell Yeah, that's cool. Nobody's ever done that?" He goes, "No, I don't think so." I go, "Wow. Then I'm doing it." So I called him up one day and said, "I'm sorry, I did it behind your back. I wrote a song called Hell Yeah. I'm going to take it." He goes, "Okay, just give me credit." I get the title. So that's where it came from.
That's a cool story, man. man. I guess you guys have done some touring under the record. What's one of your favorite tracks off the new record to play live?
Well, we don't play a whole lot of it live because, you know, we know that the people that come to see us live want to hear the old stuff, but we're going to give them a little new. So we right now we're playing Target, and we're opening with Come On. And that's just what we're doing now. I think we'll change it up and do something else later. But for now, it's just, you know, we're not really touring a lot. We're playing one-offs, just going out and playing shows. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a Black and Blue is still kind of a difficult band to book. But we're playing when we can, and for right now, Target and Come On, we're playing live.
I suggest you bring on Monkey, too. That's a killer tune, too.
I'll be fine with that. I love that tune. A lot of people want to hear Hail, Hail live. You know, there's a lot of good songs to choose from, but I think the thing really takes off, we'll probably only play, you know, maybe a couple of tunes off it live, because we got a back catalog of stuff that people are dying to hear, so we know that.
Oh, yeah, and it's hard for a band, especially if it's been away for a little while, to come back and, you know, believe me, the diehard fans like myself want new product, but the casual fans is like, oh yeah, I remember Black and Blue. Oh yeah, Miss Mystery, and you know, Hold On to 18. Yeah, I want to hear those. You know, I totally get where you're coming from. So it's cool that you guys are injecting a little bit of the new music, just to say, hey guys, this is what we're about today.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that's the right way to do it. You know, so I mean, there's some of those songs like off the first record. I mean, people are dying to hear. Some people that may have never heard us live before, I can't imagine going out on stage and not playing a lot of that record. You know, I mean, it's just we're in tune with what they want to hear. We get it. So, but we'll throw in a little live, new stuff live for sure.
Well, when you guys sat down, you know, with this project, I guess when Frontiers took over, and I talked to a couple other artists on the label, the guys from King Cobra, Dave, I don't know if you know Dave Michael Phillips, or he's also known as Dave Henserling, but Dave said that when they came to them, they said, guys, we want a vintage-sounding King Cobra record. Did you guys, I know you write Black and Blue, but did you have any kind of thought in the back of your mind to say, okay, this could be the follow-up to In Heat, or this needs to be kind of in between the first record and, say, Without Love, or did you have any thoughts like that, or no?
You know what? I mean, really, I don't think like that. I don't think that we as Black and Blue are ever going to write something that just doesn't sound like Black and Blue. I think we just write what we feel is good, you know. We're a little bit organic about it. What comes out of us, you know, it comes out. I think some of the records have a certain tone to them. For instance, Without Love, which I love the record, is we write, for that song, we wrote probably 25, 30 songs. And you've got big-time producer Bruce Fairburn, you got Bob Rock, you got Geffen Records, John Kaladner, all involved picking the songs, and they happened to pick all the songs that sounded like Without Love. I mean, we had other songs, but it kind of got formed into that, and that's where, when you're being controlled by, you know, the music industry, so to speak, it comes out that way. So we, in a way, we didn't have much of a say when it comes to, we would write songs, and believe me, we finally realized, you know, if we don't want this on the record, let's not play it for anybody, you know. You know, but that's the only way we had some control. But, you know, this record, we could do whatever we wanted, and that's exactly what we did. And I don't know if I really wanted it to sound, I just wanted it to sound like Black and Blue, and I wanted the best songs that we had to be on it. So I think it sounds exactly like a Black and Blue record. I don't know that it sounds exactly like any of the other four studio records, but it sounds like Black and Blue, you know, totally.
Well, there are definitely hints of, you know, it sounds like Black and Blue, like you said, but it's got some hints of, you know, the classic sound along with a little bit more of a modern sound, which is kind of what you expect, you know, 20 years down the line.
So, you know, honestly, I don't know. I just know I want to do Black and Blue, and I want it to, you know, and what comes out, comes out. I mean, I'm sure there's something that has something to do with writing a song in, you know, year 2000 as opposed to 1980, which, you know, Hold On to 18 was written in, like, 1981. So you get all those years to, you know, something's going to give a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I just to go back to Without Love real quick, I just want to give you props because there were so so many bands that kind of got tangled into the web that you guys did with, they came out with an aggressive first debut record, and then after that they got kind of polished due to the record company guys saying, oh, you got to sound like this, you got to sound like this. But you guys bounced back on the following record and kind of went back to, okay, this is Black and Blue, heavy. You know what I mean?
Well, that's, you know, that's kind of what happened with that record. I mean, I really do love the record, but it was like they really steered us into that direction more than we would have wanted. Now, some people, it's their favorite record, you know, and God bless them, and it's cool. I mean, it's my name is on every song on that record, so, hey, I'm okay with it. But they really did steer us in a weird direction, and that's part of the reason why we got Gene Simmons. Tommy Thayer and myself went up to his, we were touring with Kiss in 85 for that record.
Yeah, I saw you on that tour.
What's that?
I saw you guys on that tour. You were badass.
Well, there you go. So you know I'm not a damn liar. And so, you know, Tommy and I went up to Gene's hotel room and just said, look, you know, we're doing another record and we want you to produce it. And, you know, he said I'd be a fool not to. And but I, in my mind, the reasoning was, and I talked to Tommy about this before we went up there, was that we need somebody on our side, not on the record company's side. We want to be able to sound like what we want to and have somebody fighting for us, and we'll get that with Gene. And that was the kind of idea that started Nasty Nat.
And I'm guessing since Peter Criss was on Best in the West and Ron, and that I think that's such a killer tune where everybody's kind of singing.
The coolest thing about that was I was hanging out at the Rainbow and met Peter Criss. Never met him before.
Oh, really?
And he was just, you know, there with his wife at the time. And I was telling him, hey, you know, dude, I'm doing a record that Gene Simmons producing, you know. And he goes, oh, we haven't talked in years, you know. And I go, well, you know, hey, I'm doing this song. You know, you want to come down and sing some backgrounds, you know, it'd be cool. And he goes, oh, I don't know if I can do that. He was very timid about it. And when I left, his wife came up and wrote Peter's wrote their number down on the back of some kind of a piece of paper and just said, call, he needs to do this. And so his wife, you know, was the one that kind of coaxed him into it. So I called him and he was afraid to come down because he hadn't seen Gene in like 10 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And when he finally did show up, which I talked him into it, I told him, don't worry about it, man, just come down. And it was actually very cool. That entire night, we didn't record a note. We all sat down, and Gene and Peter were just kind of reconnected and told all kind of great, great old stories. It was pretty cool.
Oh, dude, to be on a fly on the wall in that room would have been awesome.
Yeah, dude, it was pretty cool to see those guys kind of reconnect. And oh my God, the stories they were telling, we were in tears laughing. It was so fun. It was a great night. And then Peter did a cool job on the song.
Oh, yeah, totally. I love that record. Nasty Nasty is one of my favorites. Out of your back catalog, can you pick a favorite? Or I'm sure everyone's special to your heart.
God, people ask me, and I don't know how to pick a favorite. You know, I, there's certain songs on every record I like a lot, you know. There's very few that I don't, you know. For the most part, I'm pretty proud of what we've done, and it stands the test of time. Some records just don't sound good anymore, you know, for one reason or another, but I think ours... most of ours really do, and I, You know, I don't know. I don't have a favorite record. I like them all for what they are. I mean, truly, it's like saying which one of your four kids do you like the best.
Exactly. I hear you, man. Well, I got to ask you about this. First, I want to preface this, but the first time I ever saw you guys, I saw you guys open up for the Aerosmith tour on the Done With Mirrors tour, and you guys were amazing. And I don't know, about a couple years ago, some record company, I think overseas, put out all your albums along with a live DVD from that same tour. I think it was from Japan or something.
No, that's Majestic Records, I think. I don't know how they got the rights to that. Universal owns all the rights to Black and Blue anymore. I think it was Majestic, but that box set thing.
Dude, how amazing was it to go on your first tour and you're opening for Aerosmith? And then your second one for Kiss. You guys had to be on cloud nine, man.
It was pretty insane. I saw Aerosmith when I was a kid. My God, I think they were opening for Three Dog Night at the Coliseum in Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
And most people didn't know who they were. And they were opening up, and I actually talked to Steven Tyler and told him that. And he goes, oh, my God. He goes, it's the first time we're on the West Coast. I mean, you saw us? You were there? And I go, yeah, and you're opening for me? Jesus. But, yeah, that was pretty amazing. And I had never, you know, look, I had never been in a plane before, and I got flown to Germany to record our first record. The first plane trip is to goddamn Germany, you know.
Oh, wow.
Then I get back, and I get on a tour bus, and I'm heading out to open up for Aerosmith at the Phoenix Coliseum. I'm, like, freaking out, you know, and it was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, the first time I ever...
to see your dream come alive, you know.
Oh, yeah, no shit, man. And the first time I ever saw you was in the Kerrang! Magazine. You guys were all eating, I think, spaghetti or pizza or something like that.
Pizza. Yeah, that's because our manager owned a pizza parlor, and we came from Portland, Oregon to Los Angeles, and we slept on this chick's floor that we knew, and we literally lived on her floor, and, you know, I don't even remember how we ate. We were just struggled. Robin Crosby from Rat was sleeping on the same floor. The Rat guys used to come over all the time, and we would always loan Wong our bass gear and different things, but, you know, we were sleeping on the floor, and we got lucky. We got this manager named Garo, and he owned a pizza place, and he got us a house that he rented for us to all live in with our roadies and everything, and we went down to the pizza place and ate pizza every day. That's how we lived. I ate pizza for a year, I swear to God.
That's awesome, man. Well, JB, before we let you go tonight, we want to ask you, do you have anything you'd like to tell the fans?
You know, first of all, any fans that we have, especially ones that have been all through the years, and then really, honestly, the new ones that may never have had the chance to see us, there are a lot of younger fans that just cling to some of the 80s stuff. Any of them and all of them, you know, just thank you so much. Appreciate it. We really love what we do, and every fan, you know, means a lot to us. And, you know, I hope we can get out there and play live near you sometime. Hell, in February we're doing the Monsters of Rock cruise, getting out on a boat, going out to Key West, Florida, and Bahamas with Cinderella, Tesla. It's going to be great.
And
Keel.
Oh, sweet, man. That's going to be a party.
Yeah, that'll be a party on a boat for 3 days. I don't know what to expect, you know. It's gonna be nuts, but never done that before. But we're, you know, really doing our best to try to get out there. We did the M3 Festival, you know, a month ago or so, and that was pretty cool. Any of the festivals we can do, we will. We just don't, it's not in our makeup right now to get in a van and go play crappy clubs, you know. It's just not, doesn't work for us, so we're trying to get on some decent bills and do some good shows. But thank you very much from the bottom of Black and Blue's heart. We love you.
And guys, we want to tell you to check out the new Black and Blue. Hell yeah. 20 years in the making, or not in the making, 8 years in the making, but it's been 20 years, man. So
you know, we weren't in the studio for 8 years every day. We actually spent maybe 3 weeks in the studio total.
There you go. Epic record, though. Epic record.
Thank you.
JB, we want to thank you for coming on the RightToRock.com and the Genghis and Ragman show. It was an honor to talk to you, man.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it very much.
Now all months ago. Things are just too empty, yeah. The rats are gnawing at my brains again. And if I see that face inside the mirror, I'll find it desperately.
This has been Dingus
and Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up. We'll be right back.